is Isaiah 5, verses 1 to 7. It's known as the Song of the Vineyard. It's a love song for a vineyard. It's not, you know, so we need to respect kind of the different genres that are in there in the Bible, and we can't treat them all the same or read them in a flat sort of way. Many of Isaiah's oracles are straightforward, hard-hitting prophetic oracles of judgment against the people, you know, where he goes, woe to you that do this and woe to you that do that. And you can see at the end of our pericope in 5 verse 8, we have such a thing, hoi, usually translated woe. Dr. Mollering told me about one translation that has it, you're in big trouble, you who do this. But this beginning of chapter 5 is not in that style. This is more of a love song. And actually, you need to follow it in its logic, because if you do, the ending is the surprise. Isaiah kind of sets you up. Part of our problem is we already know the ending, so it loses some of the punch on us. So Isaiah 5, verse 1, Ashira na li di di, li di di. Notice that this is poetry. Notice how it's half line by half line. So they put that space between the two lines. And notice how there are three words to each half line, basically. So this would be called, in traditional analysis, a 3-3 meter. That's not, the problem is that he varies the pattern, and this is constantly the case in poetry. They never sustain a pattern for very many verses. So there's some debate on whether there even is such a thing as Hebrew meter. Anyway, in this first line pair, we have 3 plus 3. The next line pair, 3 plus 3. Verse 2, we have 2 plus 2, but then 3 plus 3, and 3 plus 2. In verse 3, we have 3 plus 2, 3 plus 2, and 4 plus 3 in verse 4. At any rate, you can see the pattern varies. So, I will sing. This is from the verb shir. The noun shir means song. The verb shir means to sing. The aleph in front is I. And that ah on the end is a cohortative. Hebrew uses a cohortative to express strong resolution and intention. So I am resolved to sing. I definitely will sing. Na seems to be for emphasis. We're not quite sure what na means always. Li di di. Now, this song gives you a lot of ambiguity, and I think that's part of the intent. If you just had that line, you would say, I am going to sing to my beloved. Yadid means beloved. The E on the end is a suffix. To my beloved. That's what it says. I'm going to sing a song to my beloved. And so you think of a wife who's going to sing to her husband. Or else, my beloved, I suppose, could be a friend. I will sing to my friend. But now the next line disambiguates the ambiguity and clarifies it. Now we have it, the direct object. Shirath dodi. Shirath the noun song, and do di of my beloved. So I will sing to my beloved a song, the song of my beloved. And do di is a parallel in meaning to yadid. Le carmo, to his vineyard. So what's going on here? Somebody is going to sing a song, and it's going to be a song. It's going to be my beloved's song, my friend's song, and it's going to be for his vineyard. So Isaiah is going to sing this song in the place of his friend, and it's the song that his friend has for his friend's vineyard. Anyway, you can really hear the sound. Ashi ra lidi di shirath do di. See how you really work that shir and that deed. So Isaiah is singing a love song for his friend about his friend's vineyard. We have three parties then. We have the singer, who's apparently Isaiah. We have his beloved, who's his friend. And we have his friend's vineyard. Those are the three parties. And actually, it gets complicated when you read it real closely in the Hebrew. English translations always mess up this pericope. This is why we learn Hebrew. You don't rely on the English translations. Kerem, a vineyard, Hayah, was, Li Didi, for my beloved. This is the standard Hebrew way of doing possession. There was a vineyard to my beloved. My beloved had a vineyard. Bokeren ben Shemen. Bokeren ben Shaman. On a horn, Karen means horn. Often that's used, though, I think, as a metonym for hill, or as an extended sense, hill. On a hill, but it's not the usual word for hill. The usual word for hill is har or givah. So it's kind of a rare word. Generally, this is the case with Hebrew poetry. If you have a choice between a simple word and a tough word, they like the tough word. Poets of all languages do that. It's difficult just to read English poetry, and we all know English, you know. So you know Hebrew poetry is going to be more difficult than Hebrew prose. On a hill, Ben Shaman, literally son of oil. That's how you say fat with oil. Rich, it's kind of an idiom. On a fertile hill. Verse 2. Vai azakehu, vai sakalehu. You can hear how it kind of sounds together, how it rhymes. One of the goals of poetry then is the beauty of the language. Poets are always doing this. They're working the beauty of the language. So we ought not just read this like we read a dogmatics textbook. You know, let's find the doctrine and let's extract it out of here. No, let's appreciate the aesthetic quality of the literature. See, this is poetry, not prose. And so they pick words and they put words together because they sound good. They sound good. Vai azakehu, vai sakalehu. See, that's nice. And then vai yitaehu. There's a third one. Sorek. This is from, the first verb is from azak. He hoed it. The who on the end refers back to the vineyard. He hoed it. Who's the he? Apparently it's my beloved. It's this other person that owns the vineyard. He hoed it. Sakal means to clear of stones. The who again is the suffix. He cleared it of stones. By yitaehu. Notice there's a dagesh in the teith. Nobody has their Hebrew Bibles here. A few, okay. There's a dagesh in the teith. This is from an assimilated nun. from Nata. He planted, and the who refers back to the carom. He planted it, so rake. Choice grapes. So that choice grapes is just kind of sticking out there on the end. With respect to choice grapes or with choice grapes. Now this is a little bit unusual. Usually an owner has his hired servants do the work, right? The owner is usually not out there doing the menial labor. But this owner is out there doing the menial labor. That's impressive. I wonder who this guy is. By Yibin Migdal Betoko. This first verb is from Bana, and you lose the hay on these while consecutives. While consecutives is how you talk about straightforward past time events. It's like an aorist in Greek. And he built a tower, Batoko, in its midst. Vagam Yekev Katsev Bo. And also Yekev, a wine vat, katsev, he hewed bo in it. So this owner is anticipating a good crop of grapes, and he's already setting up the wine vat. So that when the harvest comes in, you know how they do it. They put the grapes in this, you know, circular indentation that they cut into the ground, and they trample on those grapes, right? And then the juice flows, and there's another vat right next to it. The juice flows into that lower vat, and then that's where it sits a while. So obviously, he's preparing to make wine. Against all of the fundamentalists and teetotalers out there, we Lutherans have to insist that when the Old Testament talks about wine, it means wine, fermented wine, doesn't mean grape juice. This would not gladden the heart of a Hebrew. Oh boy, grape juice, you know. And to this day, you know, in the Middle East, wine is fairly standard. In other countries, wine is a fairly standard meal drink. So it's only some segments of America that have a problem with this. The rest of the world doesn't. It kind of shows how culturally weird we are. Anyway, Isaiah is a good Lutheran, you know. And so the idea here is we bring in this grape harvest for wine. And then the next bicolon, vaikav. This is from kava, a third hey verb. It means to wait, to hope, to wait for, to hope. The noun form of it is tikva. And to this day, many Jewish women are named tikva, which means hope. And he hoped, he waited, and you have to supply for it, la'asoth, to produce, anavim, grapes. Vayaas, this is from Asa, and it produced, it made, ba'ushim. Now, translations usually have this as, how do they have this? Waited for grapes and it produced sour grapes, something like that. But the Hebrew is much stronger. It means to stink, ba'ash, to stink, to be rotten. And it produced stinking, rotten grapes. So far we just have a story about an owner who built a vineyard. He really put a lot of work into it, and he was expecting it to produce good grapes, and it produced rotten, stinky grapes. And notice what this owner did. He put it on a high hill so it has this sunlight, plenty of sunlight. It's a very fertile hill, so he didn't put it in some, you know, poor soil. He hoed it, so okay, we don't have to worry about weeds. Cleared it of stones, don't have to worry about those. He planted it with choice grapes, so he only used the choicest plants. He even built a watchtower in the midst of it. That way he can, apparently this owner is going to stay out there in the vineyard and protect it from wild animals or from thieves. You don't normally do that, I don't think. And then he already builds a wine vat to get ready for the produce to come in. And he eagerly awaited it to produce good grapes, but it yielded rotten grapes. Verse 3, Va'atah Yoshev Yerushalayim Va'ish Yehuda. And now, O inhabitant, now Yoshev is probably collective here. It's singular, but it's probably collective. You who dwell, dwellers of Jerusalem, and Ish is also probably collective, men of Judah. Now, O Jerusalemites and O Judahites, Shivtu na baini uvein karmi. Plural imperative. Judge now, or judge, baini, between me and, they always repeat between in Hebrew, and between my vineyard. In English, we don't repeat bain, between, so in English we just say between me and my vineyard. Notice the shift. Who's talking now? The owner is talking now. It's not someone else talking about the owner. Now the owner himself is talking. And the owner says, he says to Judah and Jerusalem, I want you guys to act like a jury, be real objective, neutral observers out there, and I want you guys to judge between me and my vineyard. So the owner has this beef with his vineyard, and he wants the Jerusalemites to decide the case. All right. Verse 4, Ma la'asoth, what to do, owed still, lo karmi, for my vineyard, velo, and I asithi, and I did not do, bo, in it. What is there still left for me to do to my vineyard that I have not done in it? There's a little bit difference there, different use of prepositions. To do for my vineyard, to do in it. So I've done everything in it that you can, and therefore everything for it that you can. So the owner is saying, I've done everything you can do for a vineyard. There is not a single step that I have omitted. I've gone out of my way for this vineyard. This is a very zealous vine dresser. And these are rhetorical questions. What more could I do for this vineyard? The answer is obvious, nothing more. You did everything. So it's not the vine dresser's fault that this vineyard produced rotten grapes. It's not his fault. Hebrew rhetoric often likes to use these rhetorical questions. So we have to get used to seeing these rhetorical questions. What more was there to do? Nothing. Madua, why, kivethi, have I waited for it, you got a supply, la'asoth, to yield anavim grapes, vaya'as, and it yielded, ba'ushim, rotten grapes. Notice here he repeats the line that occurred up in verse 2. Up in verse 2, the prophet was speaking about it. Here, the owner is speaking about it. Why, when I waited for it to yield grapes, did it yield rotten grapes? Another rhetorical question. The answer is, I don't know. It's not your fault. Why is that? I don't know. Then verse 5. Now comes the crunch. V'atah, notice he repeats that from verse 3. And now, odia, another cohortative, I am resolutely minded to make you know, so I definitely will cause you to know. This is a hifil of yada. So if yada means to know, a hifil means to cause someone else to know. I will inform Ethkem as the direct object, you, Eth, the direct object marker, what, Asher, what, ani, oseh, le karmi, what I, oseh is a participle, am about to do to my vineyard. Now here, the nuance seems to change. Earlier, he said in verse 4, what more is there to do for my vineyard that I haven't done? Here he says, now I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do for my vineyard. But the law is not for my vineyard, it's here's what I'm going to do to my vineyard. So there's kind of a little shift in nuance. Notice though, the same verb occurs, asa, what I ose will do. Now this is a participle. Participles are very often used for imminent future, what I am about to do for my vineyard. Well, I thought he just did everything he could for his vineyard. Well, he did in a sense, but I guess there's one more thing you can do. And he's going to tell us what that is. But so far, the Jerusalemites are supposed to just listen, are supposed to just, they're onlookers, and they're supposed to watch Yahweh do something to his vineyard. Or they don't even know it's Yahweh yet. Watch the owner do something to his vineyard. And here's what the owner says. First word, it's imperative. Haser, remove, it's from Sur, Hifil, remove Mesukatho, its hedge, Vahaya Levaer, and it will become for burning. Parots, an infinitive absolute used as an imperative, break down Gedero, its wall, Vahaya, and it will become La for trampling. Notice the same syntax, Vahaya plus La in both of them. Although in the first half you got a verb and second half a noun. So, remove the hedge, it'll be burned. Break down the wall, the protective wall, it will be trampled on. So he's apparently going to let wild animals overrun this vineyard now. Verse 6, Va'ashithehu, and I made it. I'm sorry, this is a simple wow in front of it, imperfect. So it's still future. I will make it batha. We're not sure what that means. I will make it a waste, apparently something like that. Lo yizamer, and it will not be pruned. Velo yeader, and it will not be weeded. So if it's not pruned and if it's not weeded, it goes to seed. The vineyard is going to just turn into a, you know, a wasteland. Notice the nice euphony. Lo yizamer velo yeader. See? So how he puts similar sounding words together. This is a well-crafted poem. Isaiah is the great poet of the Bible, the master. And you miss most of it in English, but he's always doing word plays. He's always doing little surprises. He leads you left, and then all of a sudden he goes right. It's amazing. Va'ala, and it will come up, and now comes the subject, Shamir Vashayath. Notice the two shins. Shamir Vashayath. Shamir, thorns, Shayath, weeds. Thorn bushes and weeds will come up. So it's going to be overgrown. So far, we don't know who this owner is, do we? We think he's a normal owner and he's just going to destroy the hedge now. Now, the next line, we start to think this owner is somebody more than just a typical owner. Va'al he'avim, and over the clouds, utzaveh, I will command mehamtir, from causing to rain, allow on it matar rain. So over the clouds, I will command them not to rain on it. I will prohibit them from raining rain upon it. So this owner has authority over the clouds. You know, that's not a typical owner. This owner is able to just command the clouds, don't rain on that vineyard. So now we start to get a hint that this owner is somebody more like God. And now comes the punchline, So far, we don't know who the vineyard is. Ki Karam Yahweh Tzivaoth Beth Yisrael. For the vineyard of Yahweh of hosts is the house of Israel. Ve'ish Yehuda and the men of Judah, Nata Sha'ashu'au, are the planting of his delight. So it turns out that the Jerusalemites and the Judahites are not just a third party watching on. They are the vineyard. See the shift? Earlier he said, I want you guys to judge between me and my vineyard. Now he says, you guys are the vineyard. See? He socks it to them. So Israel, Judah, and Yahweh, he looked vaikav, he looked lemishpat for justice, vahine, but behold, mispak, bloodshed. And then you got to supply the verb again. He looked litzdakah, he looked for tzedakah, righteousness, vahine, but behold, tzaakah, an outcry. Wonderful play on words. He looked for mishpat and got mispach. Looked for tzedakah and got tzaaka. So how can we get that in English? He looked for the right and got riots. What can you do with the second one? Righteousness and outcry. It's an outcry from the oppressed. That's the idea. The oppressed are crying out for help. How would you capture that in English? He looked for... Okay. All right. That's good. He looked for compassion and got complaint. That captures it somewhat in English. See, this is the problem with translation. You can have one of two goals. Either you translate in order to convey the meaning accurately, in which case you're going to lose all of the word plays, or you translate in order to capture the word plays, in which case you're going to lose the accuracy of the meaning. See? And there's no way to resolve that because you're going from one language into another. This is why you need to know Hebrew. If for no other reason, in order to see a word play. It's a wonderful song. God is the zealous vine dresser. He did everything he could for Israel, but Israel still yielded oppression, bloodshed, injustice, and it's not God's fault that he did that. So what is God going to do? He's going to judge Israel. He's going to level them. And now the following section of the chapter, he specifies more clearly what exactly is going to happen. But here we see that, you know, the God that Israel rejected is the loving God. Not an ogre, but a God who cared for them. Okay, we'll stop there and we'll, I guess, Wilson, do you have the Greek today?